This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go? All right, tonight we're airing the third part of three of the interview with Chad and Alta Dillard. And they definitely have some very unusual stories. They classify them as high strangeness. I think that's appropriate. Whether you believe them or not, well, that's up to you. You know, I've had a lot of weird experiences myself, and I'm not always sure I believe my own experiences. I guess John Ward's kind of said it best. We don't know because we weren't there. And in the end, you got to choose whether or not to believe the person telling you the story or whether or not you feel their perceptions are accurate. I don't believe that Chad and Alta are lying. I don't believe they're making this stuff up. What the experiences truly consist of? Well, who knows? There's so much weird stuff out there, it's really hard to tell. Talking to them off air, they seem very grounded, very down to earth, despite the strangeness around them. So, it's up to you to make up your own mind. They're just telling their story, and I'm giving them a platform to do that. Now, next week, we have something special going on. Next week in studio, we're going to have Rich Doland and Peter Robbins. And we're just going to be talking probably all things UFOs, obviously, with the two of them. But also, they're going to be on what's called the Dealer's Choice Show here on WVBR. So that is Saturday, the 13th, and if you want to check that out, you can check it out on WVBR.com. It airs at 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m., and the two of them are going to be here picking their favorite music and talking about, well, really whatever they want to talk about. I'll be hosting it, and it's 2 hours of Rich Doland and Peter Robbins and a lot of music. And a lot of them outside the normal constraints of the UFO talk they're normally on the radio for. And then a few hours later, of course, they'll do Where Did the Road Go? In 2 weeks, we have the return of Mike Cleland and Aaron Gullius as we do part four of UFO history. Artie Sixkiller is after that. This month of June tends to be very UFO heavy. It wasn't planned that way. It's just how it worked out. I think we're going to do a listener story episode on July 4th. So if you have any stories you'd like to tell, get a hold of me. You can do so at the website, wheredidtheroadgo.com. If I have too many to run in one show, I'll do a second part as a midweek podcast. After that, we have Rick Strassman in a two-part interview in July. And then I have a whole host of great stuff coming up for the rest of the summer, which we will get to when we get to it. So for now, Chad and Alta finish telling their story of high strangeness, and here it is. All right, and we're back again with Chad and Alta, and we're going to start this segment off by letting Luke ask you some questions that were on his mind.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask because I was reading through your website. And I see that, Alta, you offer spiritual guidance and almost as a professional medium. And I was wondering how long have you considered yourself been a medium, and then how long have you provided these services?
As far as providing the services, that began in 1995, after that first encounter, that craft that Chad and I tried real hard not to see, that we couldn't ignore. We left the area of Hammond. That was a small university town, hour or so outside of the French Quarter, all of a sudden, Chad and I are guided to move to the French Quarter after that encounter. And I literally had no intention of ever doing this professionally, ever, because the first half of my life, you know, at the point we moved to the French Quarter, I'm probably in my late 30s by then, 36, 37, something like that. The abilities, if you will, my mom claims I've had all my life, but I was horribly embarrassed by it and never saw it as being gifted or anything of that nature. My mom would always make claims about me that just were very embarrassing for me, using words of being a healer and all the common language now. And so that, again, just was never comfortable for me to be public about any of that. When we moved to the French Quarter, I walked into a shop one day just for a job. I was interested in selling this man's trinkets and things that he had in his shop, and he offered readings to the public. And literally, the minute he met me, it was, again, like, where's the camera? He seemed to know instantly that I don't know how to explain these things to you other than just express how it happened to me. He literally seemed to know that I had these abilities. A woman walked into his shop before he hired me to get a reading and asked if anybody was there to do so. And this man looked at me and said, "She's right here," pointed at me and sent me in this room with this woman.
And,
I mean, I got picked up and thrown in head first, and I could not believe the things that I was able to detect and what I was able to do with this woman. And I tried to fight it for a while, for weeks, if you will. I was really struggling with the idea of doing anything like this professionally. And yet I realized I'm in the city of, you know, New Orleans, French Quarter in particular. As I said, the people I went to work for started their business in 1929. So not only were they well established, but they worked with every caliber of celebrity, sports phenom around the world. People came from all over the world to these shops to receive readings. And so I seemed to be in the best of company. I felt that it was the safest, and it was represented so well that it took the embarrassment out of it. And then it became my lifestyle. It became my income. I did happen to be the only reader that was selected in New Orleans to be put in a book about New Orleans by a woman that was a journalist with the Washington Post. And so I started to reach a state of a little bit of celebrity I never asked for. And that started to convince me, you know, maybe I was doing something right, and have just continued since.
I got you. Do you and or Chad consider yourselves religious or spiritual?
Chad?
Yes. I mean, I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church, but had always known that there was, you know, more to it than just, I don't know how to say it.
The dogma.
Yeah, the dogma, you know. And I just found that as far as a box church, there was more to it. There was more that's not in the box. So, you know, once we started it on our journey, and then, of course, you know, with our experience, you know, it just kind of, so I've always, yes, I'm very spiritual as far as, you know, joy, peace, and love is my religion.
And in my case, I was raised by a mother who, I believe her world started off in the Catholic religion, and I was exposed to that when I'm little. I don't have memory of that, but this is, of course, you know, what she has told me. And then as I start to have memory, I started exploring different, all religions, basically. I was very interested in all religions, and I spent a great deal of my time studying and experiencing and what have you. To this day now, though, I have to be quite honest, because that's the whole point of coming forward. I don't consider myself one who has any longer a belief system, period. I am so open. I feel that I've been so expanded, either by my own doing or an outside force, that I don't even know how to answer questions like that any longer.
I see.
I feel it's all just so much bigger than meets the eye.
And as I know, we haven't finished talking about your experiences, but I mean, have your experiences with high strangeness affected your spirituality or how you look at life or the universe?
In my case in particular, as I said, I'm so expanded. My brain felt like it exploded time after time after time again, and anything I ever thought I knew went right out the window. I truly, Chad and I say this often in our 25 years together, we know nothing. And it just feels like that's getting bigger and bigger of an understanding, is that we know nothing. In terms of, as I said, I don't have a belief system any longer. I truly feel the essence of love. To me, love is, and it's the most difficult thing to put your finger on as you're living in a human body experiencing this, what I think is a movie. To me, this is all a big movie. And I just feel that it's just so much bigger than anybody can truly comprehend. It's hard to find words.
I often feel that the more you truly learn about stuff, the more you realize how little you know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We've made it our mantra constantly. We're constantly reminding each other we know nothing.
Did you have anything else for the moment, Luke?
Oh, not for the moment, no.
Okay. Well, let's go back to Alabama then, where we left off last time.
No, Alabama.
So another incident we're having, we had just gone to bed, and, you know, we had a window right on the wall right beside our bed, and all of a sudden there was this green explosion of light.
Lime green.
It was kind of a lime
neon
green. Now, the only thing out that window are woods. I mean, there's no houses back there.
Very rural.
Yeah, this was country. And we're like, what the heck? So we both jump out of bed, you know, because, I mean, it lit up the room. It was so bright. And we run out the bedroom and out the back door to see if we could see anything. Nothing there, no lights, no people, you know, there's, you know, nothing in the woods, just crazy green flash of light. And I mean, it was bright.
It lit up our room and it lit up our floor. It was, as Chad's described it, exactly the way he described it. And again, to this day, no answers at all to what in the world that was. So it wasn't probably, it feels like it was all within that same time frame. It happens to be my birthday. And I'd like to also mention that we had woods behind us. Now, years later, some of those woods were being taken out and people were moving in back there. But while it's still woods, Chad and I had it, we were buying a split level duplex, where the house downstairs was almost underground somewhat. And then the house upstairs had a big deck built on the back of it. So I used to go and sit up on that deck during the daytime while Chad was off at work, and I worked out of the home. And I'd sit up on that deck, and all of a sudden, I started hearing what I call a hoot barker. It was an owl or owls that would forget how to owl, how to hoot, and turn into barks, like dog barking.
Huh.
So I'm talking to a girlfriend long distance on the phone, and she can hear this. I've got the phone out saying, can you hear this Hoot Barker. What in God's name? Hoot Barker in my freaking backyard. And I'm thinking, you know, I thought Alabama was different, but that's just going beyond thinking, because this hoot barking became an inside joke, but truly started scaring the stuff out of me, because I knew what I was hearing. And I knew that my girlfriends that were talking to me on the phone were hearing this. It was as if I always needed a witness. And I've always had witnesses to these, you know, events, these occasions that would happen to us.
Right.
So it's around my birthday in May. Jacqueline flew in from out of state, from one direction, and another girlfriend that we had met in the French Quarter that I had worked with even prior to meeting Jacqueline, her name Allison, she was living in New York City at the time. She flew in from that direction to come celebrate my birthday. So Chad gets a boat for the day from a guy that he worked with. We were all friends. They wanted to take us out on the lake and spend my birthday out on the lake having a birthday party. So we spend all day long playing, eating and drinking, and just being merry and having a joyous day. Jacqueline, I had never seen Jacqueline drunk. I've never seen her not in control. She's not a drama queen of any kind, but on this particular day, we'd had a lot of fun in the sun, and she needed to, when we finally got home, she needed to lay down and just go to sleep. But I swear to you, it felt more to me, almost like she was being knocked out. Chad needed to go to bed. He didn't drink at all. He was just exhausted from putting up with the girls all day long out on the lake, and he'd had a lot of fun too, but he was exhausted. So Chad goes off into the bedroom. Those dogs we spoke about earlier, the big black Great Dane and the Roddy Doe, they had beds just outside of our bedroom door. So everybody's in bed, but Allison and I. Now, Allison and I are sober. I just, again, feel the need to preface that, because we had drank that day, but we'd gone out to supper after, you know, the day out on the boat. We'd had a big dinner. So Allison and I were clearly in our heads, knew exactly what was happening to us. We decided, this is so out of character. I don't ever remember doing it before this, nor do I necessarily remember doing it after this. We look at each other and decide we're going to go upstairs on the deck and go stargaze. And again, very out of character. That's just what we did. We trotted upstairs and went through the upstairs house and went out on that deck. Before we could get our chairs placed, literally, Allison let out a joyous glee kind of yelp. And it got my attention instantly, because it scared me. And I look up at her direction, what she's looking up in the sky, and we saw something moving zigzaggy in the sky. It looked like a star doing a dance, like zigzagging. You know, and they don't do that.
Right.
And so it clearly was not a satellite. It happened instantly, but we both saw it. And by this time now, I turn back around kind of more to my right to place my chair. And again, my head is up in the sky, and I saw it happen as well. It happened a second time. Now, this is pretty instantaneous. It lasted a flash. Now, if that's not strange enough, we look at each other, we hug each other, and we decide, well, that's enough. We're going to go to bed now. And I'm thinking, as I'm repeating this to you, how weird all of this sounds, but that's just what happened to us. So rather than come back down the stairs through the house like we'd gone up originally, we decided to go down the steps outside the deck and come back through the backyard. The way the house was set up, we had glass doors, French doors, out into the backyard in the downstairs house. Jacqueline has laid down on a couch that's just a few feet away from those doors. Those big dogs I speak about are only, I don't know, 20 feet away from Jacqueline. And Chad is just around the corner in our bedroom with a big window, picture window, right next to our bed. Before Allison and I can get to those French doors, as we're coming through the backyard, as I said to you before, we've got woods back there with that hoop barker. Literally, now this is where people start to really roll their eyes at me if all the other stuff hasn't sounded strange enough. And this is very difficult for me to repeat, but this is my absolute truth. Before Allison and I could reach those French doors, we start to hear what sounds like, I call them Sasquatches. I call them ghosties. I've tried really hard throughout my life to take the scary out of what is so scary that it's been hard to live with throughout our lives. As we're coming through that yard, we hear what sound like what people call Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever, screams, hollers, coming out of the woods. And it sounds like so many of them. I've always sounded like I've exaggerated this story, but I heard thousands of hollers and screams all at the same time in my head. But this sound was palatable, and it was mortifying. It penetrated to the core of my being, and it was invisible. And it came up out of those woods towards us like a invisible rolling sound that is so difficult to describe. Now, we're beyond fear. We're beyond fear. We're very close to those doors. I'm to the left of Allison, and she's reaching for the door handle of those French doors. That sound rolled up on us, and as it rolled up on us, this thought went off in my head instantly, we're dead. And at that very moment, I don't turn. I just can see Allison. And she is like a deer in headlights. And in that very moment, she's not going to even take the time to open up the door. She is about to bolt through those French glass doors. Something or someone commanded me to command her. Now, I used words that are not my words, but it was my voice. And the voice, the language was, you will stand in it. And in that very moment of that insanity coming out of my mouth, she was paralyzed. She never moved. It was as if she was absolutely paralyzed. And in that very, in the same breath, as I said to you, I've got this thought inside of me saying, we're dead, because I knew there was no way to survive whatever this was. And in that very moment, it was as if there was an invisible hand above my head had turned off a switch, and it just stopped. Now, those dogs never moved. Chad never heard a thing, and there was no way that this small community could not have heard what was roaring at us. And yet, Jacqueline absolutely never moved. It was as if everybody was knocked out, or Allison and I were absolutely insane in that very moment. We created that. Now, If it were not for the fact of what Chad's father and his adult brother told Chad about, I probably would never have ever told anybody about this account. Because I have never seen, now I'm part native from Arizona, and Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the hairy man, whatever one calls that, is something that's part of the native lore. I've never questioned it, but I never gave it a second thought. I just accept that it's part of the native lore. I've never seen them. I had never encountered them before that I knew of. So again, I would have never come forward with this part of the story if it were not that Allison experienced it with me, and then Chad's father and brother admitted what had happened to them in that same area. And if you are interested, I'll have Chad share that with you now.
Yeah, please do.
This happened before we had moved there. So this was around 2000, the year 2000. And we're kind of in between. We're a couple hours from Atlanta. So, and Dad did a lot of flying out, you know, for business and all. So he, instead of leaving Birmingham where he would have to take three or four planes, he would go to Atlanta. So my brother takes him to Atlanta Airport, and so they had to leave real early. This was a very early flight. This was the sun was, you know, just rising, so they were just able to see a little bit, and they get through Talladega National Forest, and they see what they thought,
which is just right next to where Chad and I lived at the time.
Right. They see what they think is a guy, a hitchhiker, you know, with a backpack, standing on the side of the road. And
on this side of the rail.
Yeah.
The highway side of the rail.
They get a little closer, and they said this thing comes up. And they said it's about 8-9 foot tall and hairy. Completely covered in hair. They said as they pass it, it kind of shifts, you know, kind of pivots to turn towards the woods and watches them, you know, kind of turns his head to and looks at them right in the eye. He said that it takes three or four steps and is off the median into the highway. Yeah. He said they just kind of looked at each other and just kept going.
Wow.
And from what I hear, that is, it's a pretty hot spot for seeing Sasquatch or Bigfoot around that area.
Well, it sounds like Alta's experience, however, might have been in a slightly altered state of consciousness, potentially, too.
Absolutely. As I said, I've never brought this story forward if I'd not learned about Chad's father and brother, because I worked so hard. I've worked so hard in the past to convince myself I'm crazy when I know I'm not. And, you know, it's a survivability and whatever it takes. And I have no idea, because I have reached out to many of the so-called experts, whatever that means, in any of these fields, but in particularly in the field of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, what have you, and they're just clueless as to how to respond to me. They don't. So
right. Well, there seem to be two very segregated fields of Bigfoot research: those who believe it's a flesh and blood monster, and those who believe it's a paranormal apparition. So I would think the flesh and blood people would really not be interested in your story at all.
No, actually, I haven't found too many people interested in that at all. And what I found interesting is what seems to get missed oftentimes in repeating this portion of what's happening to us is the fact that Allison and I clearly saw strangeness in the sky just prior to this happening.
Right.
It's only been recent, in the last few years, people are talking about UFOs and Bigfoot. And, you know, this, again, even in that camp, I've never been able to get anybody to communicate with over any of this.
Huh. Well, the Bigfoot UFO connection actually goes back quite a bit. It's just only become popular in the last handful of years, because John Keel wrote about it early on and such.
Right.
It just kind of got ignored for the most part.
Right.
So, all right. So moving on from there, how long did you stay in Alabama?
Well, we were there until in 2012, we decided that we've had enough of Alabama, and we decided to sell the white picket fence and give up our worldly possessions, and we bought us a motor home, and now we kind of travel around doing different types of shows, paranormal, metaphysical,
art,
craft shows with, you know, Alta's abilities and the shawls that we create. And when we decided to get the motorhome, I kind of shopped around online and found a motorhome. And come to find out, I find one, and it's in Hammond, Louisiana, and it's a 1995 model. So it was just really crazy that, you know, it was in Hammond, and that's where we saw our craft in 95 in Hammond, Louisiana.
And if it's not strange enough, as his partner, why I never questioned him over this, I find myself just tagging along, kind of like he did with me when I'm dragging him off to New Mexico, without question. We're driving, leaving Alabama to go pick the home up in Hammond, Louisiana. We've got to drive through Mississippi, and it's, I'll never forget this, somewhere around 2 in the afternoon, and there's another craft, a UFO, in broad daylight, in the sky, off to the left and above us. Now, Chad has got to keep his eyes on the highway. Obviously, he's driving, I'm passenger. But unlike the account that we've given about when we saw that first craft that I didn't see in 95 because I was in shock and turned my head, this time I'm looking, and I'm not blinking, and I'm absolutely studying what's up there. And what I saw was a two- or three-story-shaped building hovering. I never saw it move. It there was no sound, obviously. This was quite a ways up in the sky, and it was in the shape of what looked like a two- or three-story building. It didn't fly away. It didn't just disappear. It was as if the sky folded in around it. And then it wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, and that's what I saw. I saw it fold in or wink out. You know, it was just like it just, and, you know, like Alta said, the sky just kind of closed around it or just kind of, And that's what I saw. And, you know, I wasn't going to say anything. And then all of a sudden I noticed that Alta was looking in this. I'm like, did you see something? She's like, yes, I've been watching it.
Well, I didn't blink this time.
I just wasn't going to say anything, you know, because I didn't want to.
I didn't want him to run off the road. It was like, oh, no, this isn't really happening. Oh, my God, this is really happening.
And I'm like,
you didn't get a chance to try and take a picture, though, did you?
No, we had no camera, no anything like that. This was before my smartphone. This was when I still had my...
When he had his little flip phone.
Flip phone.
Yeah. And we just never have been, in the past, camera people, even with all of these crazy encounters. I'm real sorry about it now, but...
You had included a couple pictures that you sent me that were labeled White Sands. Now, what was that about?
So that kind of goes back to this whole, what I call high strangeness, of moving to New Mexico and having that bizarreness happen to us. That area that we landed at Madrid and Cerritos and what have you, felt extremely familiar to me from my childhood. And those pictures that you have are when I'm probably, I think I'm 14, with my best friend at the time. We lived in Iowa. My stepfather was still alive. He passed when I was 15. He had cancer. His mother lived in Arizona. So him and my mother had decided to drive for summer vacation, to drive to Arizona, to, you know, because he really knew he was in his last stages, to go see his mom. So we invited my best friend to go along. And when we got to White Sands, she was a year younger than I am. We literally jumped out of the car, and something told me to write our names in those dunes. And that's some of the pictures that we sent you, just because there was familiarity that 40 years later, or 30 years later, 35 years later, I find myself back up into that part of the world again that I had experienced when I was very young as a teenager.
I see. Okay. All right. Now, did anything, but between the Sasquatch encounter in Alabama,
yes,
and the Mississippi UFO sighting, did anything else really stand out happen?
So while we still have that home with that backyard and those hoot barkers in the woods, one night, lucky me, it seems to be me instead of Chad, I'm taken out of bed. We've gone to bed just like normal, watch television till we fall asleep. And next thing I know, you know, I clearly remember going to sleep. And the next thing I know, I'm now standing in my backyard, and this is all lucid. I'm looking around my backyard saying, what the hell am I doing out here? I'm not a sleepwalker. Never had been noted ever in my life to sleepwalk. As I'm trying to get my thoughts together, like, what am I doing here? There's something short next to me. And when I say short, about the size of Cousin It, if you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, from the old Addams Family show, you can tell I'm telling my age. Before I can get focused on what this Cousin It-shaped person, being, thing, whatever this is, standing next to me, my attention is immediately pulled up into the sky. My head, you know, like snaps back, because up above me and somewhat to the left in the heavens is this female voice that is so beautiful that she's speaking. I have no idea what she's saying. And I have to tell you, I was just so amazed by this voice that I was kind of lost my thought about what am I doing back here. In the same, almost in the same moment of me falling into that voice, and that's the only way I know how to describe it, it was just so beautiful. It was melodic, and it was just beautiful. Above my head and to the right now is the opposite. It's a male voice, and he is booming, angry sounding at me, like an angry father. And I remember my knees started knocking. It scared me so bad because I knew I was in trouble. And I, again, there's no logic to anything I'm saying to you. It's just how I feel.
Right.
So this angry father sounding voice in just matter of fact language called me by name. He literally said my name, and his words were, Alta, don't bother being afraid. Only it wasn't that polite. It was angry sounding. And in that very moment, as I'm hearing the last of that statement, my left wrist exploded in light. It was, as I've said before, like a light bulb went off in my wrist. And then the next thing I know, it's the next morning, I'm back in bed with Chad. I wake him up and I say, Chad, I have another object now in my wrist. And needless to say, I do. That was discovered by ultrasound. Also in that same location, again, in the same time frame, this would be like 2003, 2004. This is just prior to Katrina in 2005. I'm, once again, Chad and I are together. It's morning time. It's a beautiful morning. We had landscaped our backyard. We planted willow trees and we used to have an alligator and she had a pet turtle. And so they had to have their own space. So Chad built a small little pond in our backyard. And we're sitting out there, or he's actually sitting in a lawn chair right next to those crazy French doors I spoke about earlier. We're having coffee. I'm standing in those French doors, got the doors open, and I'm standing in the doorway. And we're just so enjoying this morning. And next thing I know, or next thing Chad knows, I let out a scream, a girl scream, like I don't ever remember doing before. Something hurt so bad on my left foot that it made me scream. Chad flew up out of the chair, coffee's flying. I'm expecting to see blood everywhere with the pain that I felt. You have that photo also. Right. Literally, some invisible something excised a pyramid shape out of the top of my left foot. There was no blood. We took that picture instantly. Now, that's the one time we had a camera close enough, and I said, Chad, start photographing. So he took that picture instantly. And you'll see there's no blood, there's no redness, there's no nothing. But I felt that pain of that being excised out of my foot.
Wow.
I thought she had been stung by like a wasp or something, the way
right.
she jumped, you know.
Huh. All
and,
right.
We had sent some of the other pictures with little scratches and scrapes. Those were happening around that same time too. And again, no blood in the bed. You know, she would wake up with little dots and, you know,
little cut
and, you know, looked like they'd been,
one of those cuts looks like it had been cauterized on both ends. Like, you know, there should have been all kinds of blood, whatever. And again, there was never pain involved with any of that. No blood, no pain, no awareness of it, with the exception of that excised pyramid out of my foot.
Huh. Okay. And there was nothing else going on around that time period, was there? Like when that pyramid was excised out of your foot?
No, it was a beautiful, other than the hoop-arker in the, you know, woods. I mean, literally, it was just a perfect morning.
Yeah.
I think as normal as whatever normal means we were having when that happened. It's like it's not allowed for us.
Anything you want to ask, Luke?
Have any of your experiences been reoccurring?
In what regard, Luke?
I mean, find that you have some of the same or similar experiences or... that some of your experiences have connections to other experiences you have?
Well, again, I've got two very distinct objects in my arm that happened in two separate occasions. You know, this first object, as I said, would not allow x-ray until I begged for something out there to help me, and it allowed the picture. The second object in my wrist refuses an x-ray completely, but was only detected by ultrasound. I had a personal friend who had just graduated from ultrasound school, and she had a portable machine, and she was in my neighborhood and called me up just out of the clear blue. I mean, she lived in Huntsville, which was a couple hours away, so it was just weird that she was in my area. She called up and said, you know, we're just going to take a look out. And I felt inside myself that she just thought I was a wackadoo. And she was going to, you know, come see for herself. Nobody's ever had the nerve to call us liars to our face. And so that was my senses, is that she just needed to check me out for herself. And she never expected what she discovered. When she got to my house, she just pretty much ordered me to lay down on the couch and give her my wrist. She began to ultrasound my wrist, and I heard her. I wasn't looking, because I'm like, I know what I'm going through. And she kind of gasped, and you just don't ever want to hear that when you're having one experience after another. And she said, Alta, I couldn't write a report for this if I wanted to for a doctor. She said, whatever or whoever placed it there, it. She said, they placed it where it's there because I can see it, but it won't cast a shadow. That's impossible. And I'm like, well, welcome to my world. So,
but have you ever had like a second experience, like with the Sasquatch or another black-eyed adult or anything, or are these experiences very different from each other as they occur?
So the Sasquatch, Chad and I both experienced together. I'll have Chad share with you what happened to us in regards to that.
This is, again, when we first go out on our adventure in our
little hacienda that we call our love shack, our little motorhome.
And this was, I guess, 2013 by this time. And we signed up to do a ghost
festival.
And it's in
Small town Ohio,
right around Fort Smith or something. Anyway, I find this a place that's, you know, pretty close to our venue, and
to park the motorhome,
and we start going up this mountain, and we're like, and I'm new at diving this thing, you know, and you know, we're pulling our little Jeep behind us, so we make it up there and get set up and everything, and of course we've got new dogs now, so I get the dogs out, and you know, it's starting to get dark at just by this time.
It's a small, privately owned little motor home park, very small, surrounded in woods at the top of this mountain.
Yeah, lots of woods.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the girls on the leash, and you know, we walk up the dirt road, you know, half mile or so, and as we walk back, I get, you know, 10 foot from our motor coach and hear this, what I call a grunt snort. And I mean, it went, and I was like, and I mean, the dogs stopped, their ears went up, and, you know, we all, the dogs look at me and we're like, okay, you know, and
we gotta go.
It's time to get back, you know. So we get in and we're,
and Chad's a country boy. He knows country critters.
Yeah.
And this was nothing he had ever
seen. This was not a deer. This was not a bear. This was, you know, this was
something else.
Something different. You know, something I'd never heard. And I mean,
nor had the dogs.
I didn't even want to look to see what it was, you know. So we run in the house and I get them off their leash and I'm like, out, something just grunt snorted at us. You know, and
he's scared, and the dogs are scared.
She's like, Bigfoot, it's Sasquatchy, it's Sasquatchy. And I'm like, whatever it was, it grunt snorted at us, you know. So, and we had just cooked hot dogs and macaroni and cheese, you know, our little food and stuff. So she's like, oh, we got to make him a plate.
We've got to do an offering.
We got to do an offering, you know. So she makes him a hot dog and some Cheetos and macaroni and cheese.
Chocolates and cookies. And I loaded the plate up.
Yeah, and get these. We've got these little cinnamon jellies with the sugar on it, you know, and puts it on the plate. So I take it outside.
On a thin paper plate.
Thin paper plate, yeah. And so I was like, okay, now go put it outside the... I'm like, what? Please, what are you doing? So anyway, me being the man,
yeah.
You know, I go out, and there's this log or this old tree that had fallen right out. I mean, it was like...
Right out our bedroom window.
10 foot, you know, this was 10 foot out our bedroom window, you know, right out back behind. So I go, and I set it, where, you know, if something, you know, came up, that it would fall very easily, you know, if it wasn't intelligent. So I get in and, you know, I was like, did you sit it? Yeah, I sat it. So, but before I could even open my eyes the next morning, before I could turn the coffee pot on, before I could even open my eyes the next morning, I was like, go check the plate. I'm like, okay. So I get out and I go out, and this plate is still sitting on that log, balanced on that round log. Everything is off that plate except those little cinnamon jellies. There is no scratches. There's no scrape. There's no crumb print. There's no crumb scattered. You know, if it was a dog or a coon or something like that, you know, there it would. The plate would be on the ground, and I mean, there was nothing.
Like it'd been licked clean, but those cinnamon jelly.
Except those cinnamon jelly. You know, everything was gone perfectly.
So of course, I'm convinced they're here.
They're here.
And so then.
So we go up and we start talking to the owners of the property. And this is a country girl. I mean, she had been on that property all of her life. She's in her 50s. Mm-hmm. Her and her husband, her husband's a
prison guard,
you know, they, you know.
Salt of the earth,
you know. So we go up there and tell them, you know, why we're there and all this. And they're like, well, you know, the Bigfoot hunters were here just last month. And they stopped in and
with the film crew
and all.
And we're like, no, we didn't know.
And I'm like, no. So we tell them, you know, what we heard. She goes, you know, I've lived here all of my life. I'm not scared of nothing. I ain't scared of nothing. You know, she's a Ohio mountaintop girl. She said, you know, my husband had the night shift, and one of my girlfriends came to stay with me. She said, we were out in the backyard, you know, and had our little campfire, and we were just having our little martini or glass of wine. And she said, all of a sudden, we could hear something out in the woods, and I felt something watching us. She said, I'm not scared of nothing. She said, but that creeped me out. She said, I got the willies when we went in the house. She said, so, you know, there's something up here.
So then not long after this, Chad and I would walk the girls, the dogs, down this old paved road out of this little park, again, on top of this mountain, with woods flanking us on both sides, and I'm talking woods. But those woods, this was the time of year where it was pretty sparse as far as foliage and whatever. And you could see somewhat in between trees. And as we're walking this particular day, it's daylight, and we walk longer than normal. We turn around, and as we're coming back, we could actually hear chatter. Now, that's the only way to describe it. It sounded like female voices, but it was no language that could be understood, and it was, and then it also sounded like there was young with these older female sounding voices, like there was young with them as well, like children almost, but again, invisible, moving along with us. And I would say, Chad, can you hear that? Do you hear that? And of course, he would respond with, yes, he could hear this. And this seemed to follow us as we're coming back into that park. So,
and again, the dogs would stop, their ears would go up. They were not barking or anything, you know, like that. They were very
tuned into it. And staying very close to us. And we, you know, one of them is a Australian Red Heeler, and the other one's Australian Shepherd Mix. So we're not talking little Pomeranians. These are herding dogs that they're just, their reactions in itself told us volumes. So
what is the most recent thing that's happened to you?
Most recent. Besides some of the most unusual humans we're meeting out here on, we travel the Ohio Valley, and quite interesting, just the human aspect of being out on the road and this type of, Chad's thought of something.
Okay, so here's our most recent weird thing. We, our last show, last fall, early winter, was
November?
End of November. Yes. And, you know, like I said earlier, we do these shawls. So I'm out in, we have this particular place, park that we stay at in Cincinnati.
Big and state park.
Big state, yeah, big, beautiful park. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is with our RV. And
Chad's the tailor. He's the sewer of these honor shawls that we create. And I do the fringing and the design. We do this together. But he actually does the cutting and the sewing of the fabric.
So I take my fabric and get it out on the picnic table, and I'm, you know, just kind of, and we're the only people there in the park. There's a few people up in the front for the night or two, but for the most part, we're the only ones in the park. So we go.
And a blizzard happens to hit.
Yeah, so one of the nice days, you know, I'm out there on the picnic table, and I'm straightening up the fabric and cutting the fabric, and I would take the little remnants and put it over in the fire pit, thinking that, you know, one day we'll build a fire, one evening we'll build a fire, and it'll, you know, we'll burn it away. Well, you know, blizzard hits, all that. We never built a fire. So we were back in Cincinnati 2 weeks ago. And
I've not been there since last November.
Hadn't been back since last November. I called and I requested that same spot because, you know, it's kind of out of the way. It's, you know, back in a corner. So I wanted that same spot. Well, it wasn't available. So I said, okay, well, I think I've stayed in 57. Let me have 57. So I get over there.
Which is a long way away from where our original spot was.
Yeah, I think it's like 24 or something like that. So, you know, quite a ways. So we get around and we back in, get set up. I go get the girls out, you know, to use the bathroom. And I walk over and there's a big lake right there in this park. And I walk over to the side of the lake and there are those remnants from the fabric that I'd cut. Now, this was just 2 weeks ago. I cut these remnants back in November, and they're in this spot.
And put them in the fire pit, and something has removed them, and they're not in the water. They're not wet. They didn't float there.
Yeah, they were wrapped around the little bush back behind this spot that I just picked out of, you know, well, I think we had stayed there, you know.
Huh. All right, that's definitely fitting, I think, for any thoughts, Luke?
Just that, I mean, with all the random experiences, again, you two seem to have never a dull moment. Maybe that's a blessing in disguise.
Things
I would think of it as such. Go on. Oh, I thought you were trying to say thanks, Chad. I'm sorry. So are you working on a book about these experiences?
Thank you for asking. We are, in fact. We have a whole team lined up to assist us in getting the book ghostwritten and edited and even a printer involved. It's just a matter of money, as they say. So we have discovered truth funders, and I don't know if you're aware of who they are, but they are fairly new, I understand. Mark Schwartz is the CEO of Truth Funders, and they actually have a radio show as well. They had us on last night. They'll have us on again next Wednesday to present our project, and it's a crowdfunding of sorts, with the exception of this is specifically gauged and created for the purpose of paranormal. And involving anybody interested in the world of paranormal who have projects, books, documentaries, movies, wearable art kind of things. So we finally submitted our request, and they have accepted our request and are working very hard to assist us in getting a project put together online where we can, I pray someday sooner than later, finally get this book done. We never intended from the beginning to ever write a book about anything. And yet over the years that we've been doing radio interviews, because we've been interviewing now, I think since about 2011, I started off specifically just trying to get help, just trying to find help. And that just never seemed to pan out for Chad and I. And so finally, after doing a show a few years back, the host convinced us that it was a good idea to follow through with trying to get this recorded, a book. And so it's become very important to Chad and I to try to get this accomplished. But again, a lot of money to get a book written.
The thing about it is, by sharing your experiences, anyone else having similar experiences at least might find your book and not feel so completely isolated by them.
Absolutely. We discovered early on, by coming forward and staying public, that we've had folks who have reached out to us. I've learned of suicides over this. I've learned of just horrendous happenings to folks out there that have nowhere to turn, or they're too afraid, or because of family pressure, so on and so forth, jobs, of course. Chad and I have never had children. It's just him and I. We've pretty much given up whatever a normal world is. We've walked away from. We are so honored and privileged to have opportunities such as what you're, you know, affording us, Soraya. We're just so grateful. And so we can see now really the importance of the book. There's much, strangely enough, that we've still never spoke about publicly, that will only be learned about with the book. And so there's a whole nother section of our life that we've never been public about. And it's just more than time now for that all to be recorded. And we pray it's, you know, for the purpose, not only for our own benefit, for him and I, but for anybody out there who has nowhere to turn.
Right, right. Okay, is there anything else people should know? Luke, do you have any questions before we finish this?
I don't think so.
Okay, anything else people should know? Chad, Alta?
Well, you know, just that, you know, if anybody does want to reach out and touch us or talk to us, you can find us on me on Facebook. Alta does not have Facebook, but Chad Dillard on Facebook. Alta's website is readingswithalta.com. You can also find us under Unique Rabbit, Shawls and Gifts on Facebook, and that's spelled U-N-E-E-K, Rabbit, R-A-B-B-I-T, as in the critter. No critters, no rabbits were harmed in the making of our shawls.
Well, we use no critters in the making of our shawl.
Nice.
And, you know, so we enjoy talking and sharing our experiences.
And we love to hear from folks if they're interested in, as Chad said, reaching out. And again, Soraya, we can't even begin to thank you enough. And Luke, thank you so much for even having interest in what's happening with us.
No problem. It is very interesting.
All right. Thank you, Chad. Thank you, Alta. And I look forward to your book when it finally gets published.
Absolutely. You'll be one of the first to receive.
Awesome. All right. And that was the third of three interviews with Chad and Alta Dillard. Luke, what did you think overall about these experiences?
Well, I find that, I mean, they are as random as they could be for them. As I said before, there doesn't seem to be a single theme or, you know, some common characters or narrative that they're following.
These
situations just seem to happen to them and are part of their reality.
And they seem very down to earth about it. They're not throwing out wild speculation. They're just kind of telling us what's going on.
Right. That's just what happens in their life, seemingly on a daily basis.
We're damn close. I mean, I know I've had enough weird things myself where they also haven't repeated, but not to the degree that these people have had. Because a lot of times with UFO abduction type encounters, you see that pattern repeat over and over. And even if there's other stuff mixed in, which there usually is, it doesn't overshadow the recurrent abduction theme. And in this case, that recurrence isn't there.
Right. I mean, they may have multiple encounters that involve a UFO of some kind, but unlike, as you said, people who have abduction experiences, it's not a sense of the same thing happening over and over again over time, or that there's really any narrative to what's happening to them. I mean, they're the opposite of skeptics who has nothing happened to them. I mean, they have every legend, myth, and conspiracy theory mixed in during the same encounters, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, and aside from that one encounter, they're not using hypnotic regression to recover these memories.
No.
And Alta remembered even that one. It was just Chad who used the regression for that first big encounter.
Right.
So it can't be blamed on imaginative type stuff happening during hypnosis.
Right. I mean, their experiences would probably be easier explained if they were drugged.
yes they would. That would be an awful lot of drugs over the years.
That's true.
And honestly, I think most drugged experiences aren't as unique or interesting as the stuff they're talking about.
No, I don't think it would be.
So, all right. Well, that is the end of that three set of interviews. And I thank you, Luke, for helping out with those.
No problem.
And we will be back next week. As always.
Shut the closet door. It's under the floor. The monster's there. Don't leave me here among these ghosts. You promised me nightmares the day I was born. You promised me hellfire. You were so sure I grew up. Of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chew me, slake me, thrill me. I don't want the unicorn. I want the bloodsucker. Modify the uniform. Cause I'm a monster. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Bind me, chill me, slake me, thrill me. This is a sound I've heard before. It's like a voice asking for more. Ma chère éclate à cause des ailes. En grand secteur de primavera. Give me the night. Death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Now amnesia, give me an Armageddon. Give me the daring to forfeit ordinary. door.